Hello, my friends. Chris here with another curated episode. Of all the interviews I've done, this one always stuck with me. And this would have been the winter of 2009, 2010 maybe. Richard loved running so much, he had his own real foot amputated so he could keep running. And it really struck me. This was really out of the box thinking. It shows you how you can do anything, right? Nothing can get in your way if you really want it. And part of this is recorded as I was traveling with one of my consultants in Europe at the time. And I think this was the time I stayed at the Schiphol Airport and ran into Amsterdam for an adventure down the canal path, past the windmills. And in your life, you can be rich in many things. You can be rich in money and stuff. Money and stuff is really not what you want to be rich in. You want to be rich in experience. So experiences add such depth and color to your existence. You know, stuff breaks, but experiences get better with time. And I edited out the music bits and the outro. This is the 2.0 version of the podcast. Episode 105. And the difference between the 1.0 and the 2.0 is that I had a catastrophic website failure of my original website and lost all the posts. I didn't lose the audio and I didn't lose a lot of the content because that's all hosted on a separate server. But around this time, the Run Run Live website did fall over and I had to rebuild it from scratch. WordPress didn't exist yet, and I think I was using some weird earlier technology that just didn't scale to the size of the site. Yeah, lessons learned. My current site has over 1,000 posts on it and seems to be chugging along. I checked, and we're somewhere, I don't really know because it's crashed so many times, but we're somewhere around 1 million downloads for Run Run Live. You know, 1 million plus over the course of the last 10 years. And for a while, when I was pushing out an episode a week, I peaked out at 16,000 to 17,000 downloads a month. So that's across maybe 4 shows, maybe in a weird month, 5 shows. Currently, I do 2 shows a month, and I get, you know, I max out at probably 9,000 or 10,000 downloads, maybe, you know, so it's in the 3,000 to 4,000 downloads per episode. And that seems like a lot, but in the grand scheme of things, it's nothing. It's not enough to turn anybody's attention, but it's enough to make me happy. So we're still chugging along. Enjoy the conversation with Richard, and please excuse the poor audio quality. Back then, we didn't have good microphones. All we had was rocks.
Live, the podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard that made me cry.
Welcome to the Run Run Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is not Chris, your host, but this is Chris. I'm the guest announcer this week, and when you're done listening to the Run Run Live podcast, come visit me at Five Wheels Running at lchriswheeler.blogspot.com. But that is Chris with a K, though, where I log my daily miles and my workouts, and I hope to be a better runner. So, wherever and whenever this episode finds you, I hope that you're doing great and that you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in. So, you ready to have some fun? Well, come on then. Let's go for a run.
So, why do dogs feel like they have to sit in the driver's seat when you're not in the car? Why can't they just sit
in the back seat. I come back, and he's got sand all over the place, and he smells bad. He's got this musk gland thing that he goes off sometimes. Smells really awful. The joys of having a dog for a friend. They abuse your hospitality sometimes, huh? Don't you, dog? Yeah. Hello and welcome to episode 105 of the Run, Run, Live podcast. This is Chris with a C, the mad dog, and your effable and august host. Welcome back. It's been a strange few weeks, and life keeps wheeling along at a breakneck pace. How are you? How's your running going? How's life? I gotta tell you, I'm in a castle. No, seriously, I'm sitting in a castle. You pick these hotel rooms in Europe, and you never know what you're gonna get, but I'm in a castle. It's about 11 o'clock at night, local time. I got to go to bed because I got to get up in the morning, which will be about 1 o'clock in the morning, East Coast, my time. Should be interesting. I'm going to be a zombie tomorrow night. But, yeah, I'm in a castle in the middle of somewhere in Netherlands. Not quite sure where, but I've got to go to work tomorrow. One quick correction. In the interview last week, I referred to the Boston Marathon as being on April 20th this year, and it's actually on the 19th. Sorry to have scared you. You see, it's different. It's a different date each year because it's Monday, and it's a holiday, and it's the third Monday in April or something. It's easy for me. I just roll out of bed, and I hitch a ride 15 miles down the highway to Hockington. I don't have to buy a plane ticket or book a hotel room. Actually, I do book a hotel room. We get a hotel room with the club, so hopefully I'll see a lot of you folks when you come out. Today we have a very, very interesting interview with Richard, who has had his foot amputated. That's right, he had his foot amputated so that he could continue running. And it's very interesting. Beyond that, he's a great guy, and frankly, he's got a great attitude. So we've got some other random audio bits, the flotsam and jetsam of my training, as is the stuff of my trade. Now, if you're new to the show, maybe you are a recipient of a holiday iPod or have thrown yourself into a new you get in shape program in the new year. Welcome. Please stay with it. We will help you. We love company. And by we, I mean the millions of runners who haunt this world. Have you noticed that we're in the middle of a big running boom right now? So welcome, everyone, my friends. Here I offer my bleak and pitiful audio commentary to continue to induce and continue your forward progress or progress. See, I'm multilingual. I speak fluent Canadian, fluent UK with a smattering of Australian, and I'm passable with Californian, but I'm at a total loss with Texan. But what I do possess and possess firmly is a love of running. And some might say I'm obsessed or obsessive. Pero au contraire, mon ami, mis amigas y amigos, I see it not as an obsession, but as the key to the kingdom of health, insanity, and happiness. Yeah, I love running. And I'm here to bring that love to you because through all the joys, triumphs, and shipwrecks of our lives, this thing, this gift, this running buoys us, humbles us, and is a constant measuring force. So take a deep breath, hold it for a count of two, and now release it, and when you release it, release your stress and fears and pawn your anxieties, because it's on with the show.
And now for the equipment check.
I had a great question about sunglasses. The question was how to keep them from fogging up when you're running. Well, backing up a step, everyone should know that protecting your eyes is a good idea and that runners are more susceptible to eye damage because of the amount of time they spend outside in the sun. You can wear a hat to block the sun from your face, but that only blocks the sun from above. And a lot of times when you're running, the sun will reflect up, like in the wintertime when there's snow, or if you run by water along a lake or a river or an ocean, it's going to reflect up into your eyes. Or even if you're running on light-colored surfaces like cement. So wearing sunglasses is good practice when you're out running and you're getting that reflection. I usually go to one of the big box retail stores and rummage around in the cheap sunglasses to find something suitable for running. And what I look for is something lightweight with UV protection and not too tight fitting to the face. Because if they fit right tight to your face, they'll fog up. They need to be able to vent. And I confess to never having bought an expensive pair of sunglasses that are made specifically for running. The Yankee in me prevents me from dispersing $100 for a pair of sunglasses, but I have bought intermediate sunglasses at race expos, and I found these to be basically the same as the cheap ones I rummage around for, except more money at the expo. but the same quality. And of course, I'm willing to wear tests. Any expensive glasses my friends at Oakley or Ray-Ban want to send, I'll give you a fair and impartial review. But the bottom line is, if you have the right fit and there's enough airflow, it shouldn't fog up. I find mine only fog up when I heat up, right, when I get too hot. And if I slide them down onto the edge of my nose, the end of my nose, for a few minutes to let some air in, they clear up. You know, you can also use the old scuba diving trick, which is to, before you go out, you go to the sink. This may sound gross to some of you people, but it works. You spit into the lenses. You rub the spit around. You rinse it off with water. Dry them, and that will keep it from fogging up, believe it or not. That's an old scuba diving trick. There's also specific anti-fogging solutions that you can buy, and you can get those on the Internet, I'm sure. I used to use them in the mask when I was diving. I'm sure you can get them online or at the dive shop. Did you know I used to be a certified scuba diver? Or I am a certified scuba diver, actually. Any of you old enough to remember Jacques Cousteau? Behold the mighty Nautilus as he goes about his business on the ocean floor. Yeah, that's my Jacques Cousteau expression. But in summary, and when you find the right pair of running sunglasses, guard them with your life because they are a rare and wonderful accoutrement. That's it. The Ice Path Chronicles, Episode 5. Look at those beautiful ice cubes swirling about. And now, 1 foot. 2 foot. So I ran 16 miles today with my buddy Rick from my running club. He's training for Boston. So he's trying to get some long runs in. I just had to do a cruising speed run. Sort of a long, slow distance. There's different theories on the ice bath entry. You can go in slow like this, or just plunge yourself right in. Different people have different methods. But it was nice out today. It was shorts. We were in shorts. It was like mid-40s and sunny in New England. We're getting a little bit of a melt here. In January, mid-January melt. So we did this run with Rick. He says, okay, I'll meet you over in Harvard. I got a route planned out in Harvard. Yes, named after the same guy, Harvard College. Harvard, Massachusetts. It's sort of a apple-growing bedroom community type place. But it's also known for its hills. So Rick had decided that he wasn't getting enough hill work. So he laid out this 60-mile course. All uphills and downhills. I mean, these monster 1.5 mile long pulls up these really steep hills, and so it was very challenging. So I got a good run in, even though Rick's a little bit slower than I am. I got a good run in. I really did, because of those hills. Good workout. So I'll get that going for me. I'm going out to Amsterdam next weekend, this week, and I gotta write a couple articles this weekend. Training's doing well. Taking the ice bath anyhow, just because the hills were a lot of work, and I want to make sure I didn't damage anything. I was a little sore this morning after running hard Thursday and Friday. So we'll see how it goes. Everything's going well. Have a nice day. Ciao.
And now for our featured interview.
And we're back. Richard.
Yes, Chris.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
All right. So I'll let you introduce yourself, but you know, just to set this up, you're an amputee runner.
That's correct.
And you're from Charlotte. From where are you in South Carolina?
I'm in Mount Pleasant. It's just outside of Charleston.
Outside of Charleston. All right. Go ahead. Give us the 20 words or less on who you are and what you do and how you get into this situation here.
Okay. Well, I was run over by a school bus when I was about 10 years old, and that crushed my right foot. After that, I was able to recover and run. I ran in high school, ran my whole life. I'm 56 now, but around 2000, thereabout, arthritis set into my ankle joint and began deforming it to the point where I had to stop running. I could hardly walk on it, so I ended up, for a long story short, with the amputation in order to really be able to function again. Now I can do anything I want to do, and I've started running again. I ran my first race 6 months after my amputation, and I'm looking forward to kind of like a second career in running.
So, like, this is real similar to that story in Runner's World a couple of issues back where I guess his name was Tom White. Was that the guy?
That's correct.
He had his own foot removed, similar thing, to so he could run again, because he lost the ability to run with his real foot.
Right. Yeah, he had an accident that pretty much severed his lower his foot. I believe it was his left foot. He actually reattached it at the time, and it's such a traumatic thing. You think, well, I can't run without my foot, and he was a college national class runner. But he would have actually been better off at that time if he had gone straight to a prosthesis almost. You know, in a traumatic event, you don't quite always know what you should do. You don't know all the information. But his story actually allowed me to help make my decision, especially when I talked to my wife when I first brought this up. She wasn't too keen on the idea, but it was kind of odd because it was just a few weeks after I first started thinking about this seriously that article came out. So I gave it to her to read, and she immediately said, "Oh, I understand now what you want to do." So
yeah, because there was his was fairly recent, but for you it was a long time, 1963. Yeah, you know,
right.
That's 46 years ago. So there was a lot of time. What was the progression that and you had the functionality for a long time, so what was the progression to get you to the point where you said, you know, it's time to get a prosthesis instead?
Well, shortly after my accident, my foot, because of the accident, I got hammer toes. I couldn't run off my toes. It was basically off the ball of the front of the foot, and my entire foot had calloused up pretty badly, and I started, I guess the arthritis is what drove me, or was the driver behind the progression, in that it started deforming my foot outward. So I was basically running on just the outside of my foot along the fifth metatarsal, which it became extremely deformed. And then in the joint itself, as it deformed, all the tendons started stretching weird ways. My peroneal tendon was just about gone, really, because of the deformity. My surgeon said there was just a couple of strands left to that. So mainly the pain, it just got so severe. Running was out of the question. Walking, just I had maybe 2 minutes in the morning when it didn't hurt. And then thereafter, it would hurt just to walk, to the car in the morning. So it really was the pain of the arthritis that drove the decision.
Oh, that's amazing. So you get this new prosthesis. What was the process like to learn how to essentially walk again, right? Using this thing. And what's the prosthesis like? You have multiple prostheses, right?
Well, right now I do have one. Eventually, my plan to get the running prosthesis that everyone has probably seen, the C-shaped or J-shaped leg. Anyone seen Oscar Pistorius knows what those look like, the blade. But currently I have just it's a everyday prosthesis, but it's a high-level prosthesis in that I can run on it. The actual name of it is called a Freedom Innovations Renegade. And it has some of the qualities of a running prosthesis. It's kind of got a smaller C shape to it, but it does allow me to walk with hardly any limp. I don't think you would notice I even had one if I were wearing long pants. And it does allow me to run. And so far I've gotten down to, I think if I pushed, I could probably go under a 9-minute mile right now, but I've got a sore Achilles in my other leg, so I'm kind of backing off a little bit.
Yeah, I know. I was reading your blog how your Achilles is all fired up on your good foot. So yeah, I'll give you some advice for that. There's a stretch you can do on that. There's an anterior stretch that really helps if you do a long anterior stretch on that, and I mean for like 5 minutes before you go out, and like
right.
5 minutes when you come back. And also stretching the hamstring on that side, because it's all a connected system. So if you really put the work into stretching that leg 5 minutes before or 5 minutes after, you can run through the Achilles and it will get better.
Right.
But only if it's not, if there's no tear.
Right. Well, I'm being careful with it. I've been going back and forth. I'm supposed to run a race tomorrow, which I feel like I will still do because I'm not able to run as fast as I did before yet, so the actual dynamic stress I put on it probably won't be as great. And I've run a couple of times this week, and I have been doing some stretching and icing, using an ice bath for it, and I got some eccentric stretches from Owen Anderson's site. So I've been religious about doing these things because I don't want to get any worse, and then next week I'm going to take it much easier and just give it time to heal and not do anything foolish like speed work or anything like that.
Yeah, so you're basically running just like you would have run before.
Yes.
With the new prosthesis. That's amazing. And you don't find your mechanics are different at all?
Yeah, they are. I mean, in my mind, when I run, I think, like, as I, my mechanics get better, then I'm getting closer to my my old able-bodied gait. But just because of the way that the prosthetic foot compresses, it's different. It's also a very different feel. If you've ever woke up in the morning and your foot was sound asleep, and you had that very numb feeling, that's kind of what it feels like on my residual limb, that it's numb and that I've got this, the prosthesis itself is held on by a suction liner. So it's kind of a, again, I guess if you've ever worn a air cast, something like that, a very tight feel to it.
Yeah.
But it is, so basically when I run, when I step on my prosthesis, I try to load it, put my weight on it, trust that it's there. It does have some energy rebound to it, not a spring or anything, but it feels pretty good. I mean, it's obvious, and I'm very conscious of it, but as I run further and longer, I tend just to think about running and not running with a prosthetic leg.
Right, you just forget about it, right? And it turns
right.
Right. That's so cool. And do you think that's the change in your mechanics is why your Achilles got inflamed?
It's entirely possible. I think it was a combination of things. I did run, we have a large suspension bridge here, the Cooper River Bridge, and about a week before I ran over that for the first time and back. And that's basically straight uphill and then downhill and then the reverse course, and it's all on concrete. So could have been overuse, but hard to know. But it is some, I am pushing off. That's where I get my energy in my left leg, pushing off my, my calf and whatnot. My right leg, I have no calf, so my other muscles have to take over for that. So, yeah, it's probably stressed a little more than usual.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm telling you, all you got to do is work that anterior stretch and that Achilles. So, and what I mean by that is you want the flexibility on the joint so your toe comes almost, that angle, so your toe comes up towards your shin. So you want that angle, you want to be able to stretch that angle really acutely. And over time it will, you'd be amazed. Because most runners, if you lay them down and try and stretch that Achilles, they can't get past 90 degrees on their foot.
Wow. Well, I'm looking at mine right now as we're talking, and I'm probably going just a few degrees past 90, maybe 95.
Yeah, and I've had chronic Achilles, and when I do this stretch, I'm getting down in the 40-degree range,
Wow.
So that's, but it's one of those overtime things. You really got to hold the stretch for a long time before and after.
Well, I will certainly do that.
Work there. And then for the most part, it doesn't hurt as much anymore. The good news is that when you warm it up, it feels fine. It only hurts afterwards.
Yeah.
So what about this process surprised you? What weren't you thinking was going to happen?
Well, I did as much research as possible. I mean, I went into it with my eyes open. I contacted a lot of people beforehand and during. I think anything that surprised me more than others. I mean, things happen like you're through running, and especially initially getting fitted, the residual limb, you get blisters in places you just wouldn't think about, and you have to take good care of your skin, so let these things heal up so you don't get infections. Gosh,
and
there's a lot.
You turned it around pretty fast. I mean, you were amputated in April of 2009, and you were back your first run in, what, November?
November.
Yeah,
that was exactly 6 months. And I had a cold the week before. I'd gotten, it was probably H1N1, but I was recovering from that, so I wasn't sure I was going to run, mainly because of the flu. But that was probably one of the proudest moments of the whole process, and looking back, that I was able to, in 6 months, run. It was actually an 8K. I felt like, because I'd had some setbacks with blistering and having to not run and getting the fitting process, and I just wasn't sure how long it would take. I was kind of when I was first thinking about getting this done, that I thought it would probably be closer to a year before I could run a race. And by running a race is kind of in the liberal sense of the word.
Yeah.
But,
well, I'll tell you, you're running faster than a lot of the people I know who I talk to who are back of the Packers. You're running 10-minute miles your first race back from having your foot amputated. I think that's pretty good at 56 years old.
Well, I appreciate it. It was an amazing experience, and the runners as a group are just very supportive people. It was an incredible experience. It's like I tell a lot of people, I feel like I have a second life as a runner, as an able-bodied, and now I kind of rediscover it all as an amputee. And it's not like I was always a runner and always felt like I gave running my all. And so it's kind of like being shown something more than I could have imagined. It's just it's difficult to explain, but it is like a second life, really, as a runner.
Yeah, I think I'm reading your blog, and I think the interesting entry here is it says September 26th. It ends up, and it says, I am a runner again. And I think that has a lot of emotional power to it. You must have had some, I mean, you sound like a calm guy on the phone, Richard, but you must have had some emotional whiplash going through this process back and forth.
Yeah, I think the day that I actually, we had the talk with the surgeon, and I made the decision that and scheduled the operation. And that was a tough day because you really came to mind what was going to happen. That was actually probably the hardest day of it for me when I woke up, because I had done so much research. I kind of knew what to expect when I woke up from the surgery and saw my foot was missing. That, of course, we had medication and things, but yeah, it really didn't disturb me that much. It's kind of odd, the things that affect me. It's not what I would expect. You know, you might expect, yeah, when I wake up from surgery, my foot's gone, I'm going to feel horrible about it. But because it wasn't a trauma to me, I wasn't in an accident that they had to take my foot off. I knew what to expect, so that wasn't as bad, I guess. But there's just other times, like when I think about the ability just to, you know, tomorrow I'm going to be able to go out and stand on that starting line with all those other runners. Whereas in the beginning, my surgeon told me, he's a young doctor, and he said, you know, before I had my first surgery for the arthritis, he said, dude, your running days are over.
And right.
So that was tough to hear. When I knew at that point, I said, not to the doctor, I said, look, I said, I know this guy, Oscar Pistorius. I said, he has no lower legs at all. And he's setting, or coming close, you know, setting world records in the Paralympics.
Yeah.
So here I've got this non-functioning anatomical foot, and you're telling me I can't run. But at that point, we had not discussed amputation. That would come later. But I knew I could run again. It's just having to go through the process to get there.
That's great. So what would you, you know, if you're talking to people, you know, when you talk to people, what do you tell them? What advice do you give them?
As amputees go, or?
Well, whatever, you know, amputees or others.
Oh, I would say if you want something bad enough, it's never quit. Obviously, there's some things that life throws at you that are insurmountable. Let's say cancer. You know, if you have a certain form of cancer, that may be it. But you can still struggle and fight against it. And a lot of folks who may have had a death sentence from cancer do put it into remission and beat it. But mainly is to think that, as a human being, that never shortchange yourself, that you can do more than you ever imagined. Even people who think they couldn't, who are maybe overweight and sitting on the couch and think, oh, I can never run a marathon. As long as you have no, you know, debilitating injury or, you know, bad mechanical problem, you can probably succeed and do whatever you want to do, but just don't shortchange yourself as a human being.
Exactly. That's a good message. So you're not having any phantom pain in the missing limb, huh?
Oh, I do have some phantom pain. It's much better. That actually, what you mentioned before about being surprised about the process, that would be the thing that surprised me most, was the phantom pain, which kind of peaked about the 4 months after my surgery. But I do have some. It's not as strong as it was. But even as I'm talking to you right now, I can sort of feel my old foot down there, a sensation, not really pain. But that comes in handy in order to sort of place your foot in space. So when I'm walking, I don't have to think about, you know, I have no feeling in that prosthetic foot, of course. But I do know where it is in space because I do have the sensation of where it used to be.
Right. So you can train your mind to estimate where that foot's going to land.
Right. And that's right to the point now. I don't, you know, when I'm walking, other than having the sensation of the prosthesis on my leg, I don't even think twice about, you know, missing a step or something because I don't really feel it down there. I may have my foot under a counter or something and, you know, nearly knock myself down because I don't realize it's down there. But as far as where it is when I'm walking, it's really no problem.
What's the future for you? You going to get one of those cheetah feet that everybody's wearing, the real fast ones?
That is my number one goal now. That's going to be for me like Christmas in of all time. I'm working with my prosthetist on it. We're hoping to get either a sponsorship or what they call a scholarship so that one of the prosthetic companies will give me one for free, basically. If that doesn't work, there are avenues to go through organizations like Challenge Athletes Foundation. They have ways to go and get, I won't say it's a sponsorship, but you can get a grant, basically, to get equipment. And so
what's one of those, I guess, the carbon fiber cheetah things cost?
I see a range in that. It's not like you can go on a website, and say, here it's, $12,000. But they are, best I can tell, they are in that range, $12,000 to $15,000. So they have to be built up, and they're built to according to your weight. And they're kind of, what I understand, they're done by hand, as opposed to the other prosthetic feet may be able to done, more an industrial assembly line type of operation. But they are, for that reason, they're more expensive. So, if I have to, I will have to purchase one, but I'm hoping that I won't go through that whole expense.
Yeah, you don't want to get the used one or, the lower quality one, right?
No, I want to. I don't want that to be what's holding me back from my running. And the foot I have now, I can run, like I said, I can run pretty good on it. But when I get to where I want to run at my top speed, I won't be able to do it. I don't have the range of motion and things that I need. So that is my next goal, is to, that would be almost as big as being able to run again for the first time, is to get that foot. I'm really looking forward to that.
See, now this is a never-ending thing, because you're going to have to get the skiing foot, the snowboarding foot, the mountain biking foot, whole thing, right?
Honestly, if I told my prosthetist, if I could have the running foot, I could wear this temporary prosthesis from now on. But the running foot is my goal. And there are some things you can get, like a biking foot, which Amy Palmiera Winters has one for her bike. And it's basically just the socket, and it ends in a bike cleat. So it doesn't really have a foot on it. And you just clip in and go. So that's kind of like, she's way out of my league in terms of talent. But it would be better for me to have a dedicated biking foot, because then I could have my socket fit differently. Because right now in my current socket, when I try to ride my bike, it tends to put a lot of pressure on the distal end of my residual limb and causes blisters. So,
and you're pulling a lot on the bike too, which is different. So it's trying to
pull. Right.
Well, this has been fascinating, Richard. Thank you very much for talking to me.
Sure thing. I appreciate you talking to me, Chris.
Yeah, and you get a great story. It's very inspirational. So that's a great message. You can do whatever you want, even if it involves taking a foot off. Right.
Right. Right.
Exactly. All right. I'm going to let you go because we're running at the end of our leash here.
Okay.
But, let's stay in touch.
Okay. Thank you, Chris.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Here's today's quick tips.
Okay. For the quick tip, I had an interesting set of questions from Sweet Daddy D about hill training. He asked me if he has a course by his house that's hilly, and he asked if running a hilly route qualified as hill training. And the answer is yes and no. Certainly, the more hills that you work into your normal running, the better able you're going to be to handle them in an actual event. But just running a hilly route is a bit nonspecific if you intend to race a hilly race. What I found is that when beginners especially run hills, they tend to change their mechanics on the hills, meaning they run slower, they shorten their stride, they hunch over, and they slow down too much. They change their mechanics, they hunch into the hill. And this is not a good way to train if you intend to race on hills, because essentially you're practicing struggling on the hills, and I'm not sure that's a useful skill to bring to a race. A great way to get the specific workout you need for hilly races is to run that hilly route at a constant effort level, and don't let your form degrade. Don't let your stride or your mechanics degrade when you go up and down the hills. Practice holding a normal running form. Stay upright. Focus on lifting your knees. Keep your chin up. Look forward. Pretend you have strings or elastic bands tied from your hands to your knees so that each time you bring your hand up, it pulls your knee up. Don't worry about speed. Run by effort level. Try to maintain a constant effort level and keep those mechanics clean. And your effort level will go up, but not to the point where you're suffering. You want to be able to run, find a strong, normal stride that you can use on the uphills and practice it on that hilly route. And once you get good at the mechanics of uphill running, then you can add some effort. and go out that same course and run it at tempo level with those same mechanics, just with a lot more effort. And so like an 8 on a 1 to 10 scale effort level, tempo level, through that same hilly route, and make sure you run through the tops of the hills and practice your active recovery on the downhills. Don't stop and walk or stop at the top. And this type of tempo hill run is an incredible workout and will make you a hero on race day as you pass all the rest of the panting masses on your way to victory. And that's what I got to say about that. Well, folks, it's that time of year again, and I'm pleased to announce that registration is open for our 19th year for the Groton Rose Races, which you are invited to run with us on April 25th, 2010. And this is a great event. Our races are run on a beautiful course, beautiful courses through scenic old New England town of Groton, Massachusetts. We have a classic 10K, a 5K, a 2K, and a tots trot for all ages. All of our courses are closed to traffic and well supported by an experienced volunteer crew. Ask anyone who's run a Groton Road Race over the last two decades, and they'll tell you, we love what we do and we do it well. And our race is a regional favorite and draws over 2,500 participants each year and their families. On Sunday, April 25th, we'll gather on the infield at the Groton Middle School and relax in the grass with live bands and food. It's a celebration of our area and our people, and it's really a wonderful time. So I hope you can come out and join us. We have kept our entry fees low year after year to encourage participation. We are an entirely volunteer, nonprofit organization, and all proceeds go to fund local scholarships and youth sports. And each year, a local professional graphic artist creates a one-of-a-kind, high-quality race T-shirt. And you should go look at the website, www.grotonroadrace.com, and look at some of the previous year's shirts. These shirts are not something you're going to give away or use as rags to wash your cars. These are collector's items, and you can see them being worn proudly all around our area, around our region. So come join me, April 25th, 2010, for the 19th annual Groton Road Races. That's in Groton, Massachusetts. It's about 40 miles northwest of Boston, and it's a great race in a great place with great people. So you can sign up now at www.grotonroadrace.com. Thanks. Well, folks, that's it. You've gotten 45 minutes older and not a whit smarter or better by listening to yet another fulsome episode of the Run, Run, Live podcast. My parents paid good money for that education. I got to use those big words. I'm recording this from a trip to the Netherlands, and I'll try to collect some musings and send them over to the Extra Mile podcast as well and take some pictures and that sort of thing. My internet access is a little sketchy, and my sleep deprivation is pretty high. Next week, we're going to talk to Jim, who has created an iPhone application for track geeks. And with all the noise about iPhone apps, I was interested to understand the mechanics of it all and thought you might be as well. So we're going to clear all that up next week. I still have to, on my to-do list, to clean up my website and get all my old episodes up for you, but I'm challenged by having the great fortune of too many opportunities to add value, and I'm presently forced to triage my activities the best I can. There are so many things I want to do, but they flee from me each day like a school of frightened minnows. I read an interesting article this week from a newsletter I got. It was about living in the present, and the author said, forget about yesterday, it's gone, and forget about tomorrow, it's an unknown. He said, the only real time is right now. It's today. And if you can clear up your worrying about yesterday and your worrying about tomorrow and just focus on today, today is the time to focus on to do a good job, and that'll make you more effective today. And when today is gone, it's gone forever. When tomorrow comes, it'll be another today. So I thought that was an interesting message. And his point was not to carry the baggage of yesterday around with you and let it ruin your today, or carry the worries of tomorrow around with you and let it ruin your today. And as you've heard many times, I'm sure, the past is past and you can't do anything about it. But you can change today. You can decide right now what you're going to do, and you can decide whether today is a good day or not. It's a decision you make. And the day doesn't make a decision to be good or bad. You make the decision to have a good day, and you should. Because today is the only sure thing you have. So choose well, my friends. Choose today to be the cornerstone of a grand structure, a towering pavilion of happiness and fulfillment. And as you architect your pavilion, look about you, because you might see me, and I'll see you out there. The music tonight is a ditty named Jackie from a band called Transcendence. Go find it on the PodSafe Music Network. Give the starving artists some love, because they're doing what they can to color our world, and we should at least have the decency to give them some shekels so they can afford the ramen noodles to keep at it. Ciao!
Run, run, live. The podcast for all your running needs.